in the stimulus package that was discussed and has been introduced in the House, there's about, I'm looking, $42 billion for the kind of energy that we haven't spent a lot of money on in the past. There's $23.8 billion for conservation and efficiency, efficiency programs for home weatherization, energy efficiency block grants for states and localities. There are energy efficiency upgrades for public housing and federal buildings, about $9 billion there. There are funds to improve energy efficiency at schools and institutions. So $23.8 billion of conservation on energy efficiency, and on top of that, another $18.5 billion for advanced energy research and demonstration. Some of this is continuation of past programs, but this is a lot of new money, and it will all be cost-effective. Energy efficiency is the number one thing we need to do to put our energy supply in balance in the future.
And if you look at facilities, and the federal government certainly has a lot of them, hundreds of millions of square feet of leased, plus they own thousands of buildings. Where do you get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of conservation? Is it the light bulbs? Is it the heating systems? Where do you start?
Well, the money does go for electricity for lighting and for heating, and of course both of those would be two very important areas. I have to point out that energy efficiency for the federal government is not a new issue. In January 24th of 2007, President Bush issued Executive Order 13123, which was what I called a stealth efficiency order. Wasn't much publicized, even within the energy industry, wasn't much talked about, and yet it had all of the kind of things that many progressive people were calling on that administration to do in the private sector. It calls for a 3% annual reduction in energy intensity through the year 2015, or a 30% reduction in energy use by relative to 2003. It calls for half of the renewable energy consumed by government agencies to come from new energy, renewable energy resources. It calls for the federal government buildings and facilities and people to look for locations on their own property for renewable energy, for on-site wind and on-site geothermal, on-site solar. It calls for a periodic evaluation. It set up a federal energy efficiency executive. All of this was established, and then not much was heard of it. So,
but we covered it here on Federal News Radio. And I think industry-wide, you know, people who are covering government are aware of this. How far down the path are federal agencies toward meeting these goals? Do you think that they are far enough or more room to grow?
Well, unfortunately, many of these goals also call for capital expenditures. As Dr. Stephen Chu has said many years ago, and I've quoted this extensively, it's not people that use energy, it is devices and buildings. And so the biggest way we can improve energy efficiency is to invest capital in new equipment, new motors, new elevators, new furnaces, new windows, put in capital in insulation. That is, we have to buy things that are more energy efficient. That's the fastest way we can do it, as well as make some lifestyle changes. So I'm not sure the funding followed the program. As with many federal programs, the programs are announced and then the funding doesn't follow. Congress has other priorities and doesn't fund all these wonderful programs that they've talked about.
Well, maybe the stimulus package will have, you know, some of that, for replacing that. There's a lot of money going to federal agencies.
And not only that, it sounds like they're trying to put money out in the communities for more fuel-efficient homes, you know, to low-income families don't have the money to put new windows in, but perhaps some of these dollars coming from the stimulus plan will accomplish that. We're talking this morning to Branko Terzic. He is with Deloitte Services, and he is with the Global and U.S. Regulatory Policy Division within Deloitte, and he is the former commissioner of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
And I wanted to ask about another issue that will be coming, could potentially be a big regulatory issue, and I'm asking you this in your capacity as former utility executive, and that is the idea of utilities using a certain amount of their generating a certain amount of their output with renewable sources, so-called, you know, windmills or whatever it might be for them. Is that doable, and what would it cost?
Well, yes. What we're talking about is even with our slow economy, we will have increasing demand for electricity, is what we're talking about here. We had estimated about 1.5%. Now we're estimating 1.3% growth. But we have currently the mix is 50% of our electricity is generated by coal, 20% by natural gas. Now, both of those emit greenhouse gases, natural gas half the rate of coal, 20% by nuclear, and then we have some federal hydroelectric, some private hydroelectric, less than 3% from what we would consider real renewable energy. The president-elect has indicated, and tomorrow the president, that he'd like to double the renewable. That would take it up to 6%. But right now, renewable energy is more expensive. And for large renewable, for large amounts of wind and large amounts of solar, you've got to run transmission lines out to the Great Plains or out to the Southwest. And so we have a transmission constraint. We don't have adequate transmission. And we also have the complication that most renewable energy is intermittent. The wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun doesn't shine all the time. And so there is a coordination issue of trying to coordinate these intermittent power flows, a technical issue. And the next issue is the smart grid. Once we get the smart grid in place, then it'll be much easier to bring in more renewables, which everybody wants.
You mentioned that 50% of the energy in the United States comes from coal. And one of the planks of the incoming administration, one of the big debates has been about clean coal. And what are some of the issues surrounding the reality of using clean coal in mass amounts or cleaning up what coal we have?
Yes, technically 50% of our electricity comes from coal, 20% from natural gas. Both of those are greenhouse gas emitting technologies. With respect to the coal, in the future, we would have to capture the CO2 out of the end of the process, either capture it from the coal and then make electricity. That's one option. Or make electricity with the coal, burn it, and then with the exhaust gases coming out, capture it. In either case, we have to do something with that CO2, which is the storage. And storage can be done either in depleted oil fields, in geologic formations here on land, or it could be done in deep sea storage. The problem is we don't have the technology, we don't understand the geology, and we don't have cost-effective solutions yet. We're about 20 years away. We need to be spending billions of dollars. The Europeans believe they need to spend $12 billion on a minimum of 12 projects, and these 12 projects would test the various different options. If they do those 12 projects, which they've delayed and they're slow on, we should probably do 5, 6, 10 here in this country, in North America, between us and the Canadians. Everything's been delayed. We're a day late and a dollar short, and I'm afraid if we don't create clean coal technology, we're either the lights are going to go out or electricity will be very expensive from the alternative sources.
And so if there are to be alternative sources beside the technology for coal that you're talking about, what would you project that they would be?
Well, I would refer any member of the audience to the National Petroleum Council's report, The Hard Truths About Energy. The National Petroleum Council is a advisory body to the Secretary of Energy established during President Truman. They've written one of two reports that I recommend anybody read. If they don't have much time, read the 20-page summary of the National Petroleum Council report, and then read the 20-page summary of the Stern Review of the Economics of Climate Change that came out in 2007. Those two documents will give you a terrific understanding of the dilemma that we are in. If we don't have coal, the National Petroleum Council report and every other report, including the Chamber of Commerce's plans, call for other sources of supply. We have to move it. And I'll even refer to Stephen Chu's testimony in which he says we have to talk about a greater commitment to wind, to solar, to geothermal, to nuclear power. He said there would be a continued commitment to nuclear power. We would have to look at maybe more hydroelectric, unusual kinds of ocean power, wave power, distributed generation, maybe have more local windmills, local units. It's just going to have to, we'll have to move ahead on every front. The key is there's no single solution.
And the grid, is that capable of absorbing other sources of power generation? How does the electrical grid get the power into it?
First, I have to tell this audience as an engineer, we have the most fantastic, durable, reliable electric grid in the world. This is the most complex machine, the North American electric grids, there are multiple grids, created by mankind. It has enabled a 20th century life. It has enabled communication. It is a very good, robust, durable system. But it was designed under a different model where we had individual, single, large power plants bringing power to local supply areas. Power plants in mm-hmm. Wisconsin, predominantly bringing power to Wisconsin. Power plants in Ohio. We had some exchanges, regional exchanges. We do not have a national grid. We don't even have a national interconnected electric system. They are regional grids. Unfortunately, if we look ahead to large wind power and large solar arrays, we will need to expand our system to have this capability, which we don't have now, of major long-distance power transfers. This is going to be an expensive proposition. So we need to do two things. Number one, make more investment in the capacity of the grid. And number two, go into the modern computer-assisted smart grid, where everything from the power plant will communicate directly through power markets to your appliances. Your appliances are going to have smart chips in them, and they'll be able to understand signals as to what the price is of electricity, whether there's storage available or not, whether they should turn themselves off or on. We won't have to worry about it. But in the future, your house will be intelligent because it'll be part of the smart grid.
So your smart aleck dishwasher will say, not now.
That's right.
We'll have to wait until the price goes down.
I'll
exactly.
Save you a dollar.
Or you can override it.
We're talking with Branko Terzic of Deloitte Services, and he's a former Energy Regulatory Commissioner, and as well as an engineer and utility executive and renaissance man when it comes to power. Now, you are one of the authors in a new book that's coming out in the United States called The World Crisis, The Way Forward After Iraq, and you're in company with some well-known people like Jimmy Carter, Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, the names go on and on. Tell us what you wrote about in this book.
Yes, I wrote about exactly what we're talking about now. I wrote about how in the 21st century, we've got a great dilemma. The dilemma of the 20th century, which we didn't solve, was to bring power, energy, electricity to everybody. Well, we did it to about two-thirds of the world population. There's still a third of the world population that at this moment doesn't have electricity, a third that doesn't have adequate electricity, the lights go off and on, and the lucky third here in the United States, North America, that does have electricity. In the 21st century, we still have that problem of getting affordable and adequate energy to humanity. But we've now complicated it with another condition, and that is we have to do so without triggering a climate change catastrophe. In my chapter, I talk about how we can bring power to the world by engaging markets, by engaging private capital, and through government policy and government regulation. I firmly believe there's a role for government. It has to be part of the equation. It has to be part of the solution. And in many parts of the world, that's not well understood how that should happen. And secondly, I believe that we can meet the climate change issue by following Lord Stern's admonition that we can spend a certain percentage of our GNP, 1 or 2%, in order to mitigate and protect ourselves against the possibility of climate change. Now, I will allow that there are people out there who are skeptical. That's fine. Climate change isn't guaranteed. It's a possibility, a probability. But we spend money on armies. Many countries spend 2% of their GDP on armies. They've never been to war and don't expect to go to war on the possibility that they might need to go to war. So my chapter talks about this. It talks about how we can, with public expenditures and with engaging markets, we can meet the challenge of having adequate, safe, reliable energy supply and at the same time not triggering a climate change catastrophe.
Well, we thank you very much for being with us. Fascinating stuff. We could go on because everybody cares about electricity.
Check out the book. It's called The World Crisis, The Way Forward After Iraq. And it's got many notable contributors as well as our guest this morning. So you can find it at Amazon as well as other locations.
Branko Terzic, the lead energy thinker for Deloitte Services, utility executive engineer. And it's been great having you with us.
Jane, Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.